forever. Dog.
Do not go gentle into that good night.
Poetry, I feel, is a tyrannical discipline.
I was trying to tell a story.
The book came to me in a sort of a haze.
This is how to write a good short story.
No hope, just booze and madness.
Everyone in the world has gone to bed one night or another with fear.
I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness.
Now, lend me your ears.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Literati, a podcast for, by, and about stuff. I mean, specifically, we're a podcast about books and writing, but we found that to be a little limiting, so now we're rebranding to be more vague.
Yes, we made the age-old mistake of narrowing in on a topic that, frankly, no one likes. So now, we decided to talk about something that everyone likes. Stuff.
Oh, I love stuff. I can't get enough of that stuff.
Same here. I'm constantly buying stuff, eating stuff, and doing sex stuff.
I'm literally made of stuff.
And you know, one of my favorite stuffs is books.
And now we just subtly slip back into it. You
easy know, does it, easy does it.
When people think of writers, they imagine tweed jackets, smoking pipes, and spectacles. But writing isn't just old-timey recluses wearing boring clothes.
That's right. Technology has affected the lives of authors, and instead of fighting it, we here at Literati have decided to embrace it. And I made a hug. I made a
That's
hug
really
gesture.
That's really cute, Colin.
Yeah.
I like that. I feel warm.
Yeah.
We've embraced it so much so that we're now trying to get robots to do our jobs for us.
Yeah, we would. That would make things a lot easier.
The worst part about writing is thinking of things and typing. And so we thought, what if there's a really great AI, which stands for artificial eye, out there that can sort of do some of that thinking, and then we can be free to do important stuff like laundry and cheating on our loved ones. So we looked it up, and that already exists.
There's great.
A number of really great websites and AIs and bots out there where all you need to do is write in a simple prompt, and a modern neural network will complete your text.
Oh, great. So wait, how is it that finishes a sentence or a paragraph?
It'll write a whole paragraph. So you can go to, you can look up talktotransformer.com. This is a real one. We're not sponsored. In fact, we might not even be supposed to be doing this online. And it will take what you write. So you know what? Enough talking. Why don't I just tell you? So call me Ishmael. We all know that. Famous first line of Moby Dick. Let me type that in. And now, Moby Dick, I don't think that's a great book. It's pretty long. I think a whale is not the most interesting animal you could base it around.
No.
Let's see if this AI can come up with something better. So right now, it is thinking. And I probably should have hit start earlier so it would have all this time to... Oh, here we go. Call me Ishmael. I'm a slave, sir. I am your slave. Okay, this is not a great start. Second line, I'm not a slave, a man who looked to be in his 20s said. I don't have a master to be your slave. And then this is all dialogue. Next line, I do not understand. New line, I'm a slave, I'm a slave. Okay, an elderly figure stepped forward, his face red. I am a slave, I have no master but you. A woman in a light blue dress walked by holding an umbrella that she had lifted and was now swinging. The woman called her by her name. The slave... are all slaves. Okay, so I'm going to call, let's just call quits on that one. Not the best. I think that maybe Moby Dick has that built. And just for anybody listening, this isn't a pre-written joke. This is us letting an AI complete a
so
sentence.
So far, that first one is a case for us to not let the robots take over.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, let's try another one. Colin, did you, maybe this sentence from Tolstoy.
Oh, yeah. So why don't we, would you mind plugging in?
Sure.
Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is
okay.
Unhappy in its own way. I am so afraid that the first line is going to be, I'm a slave.
It's not. But this is doing something really weird where each paragraph is numbered. So this is a really weird looking list. So happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in
That's
its own way.
That's what you plugged in.
Yep. Two, you don't have to believe everything you hear because you are not alone. Three, you can have faith in God's infinite love. He forgives every wrong person and every wrong action in his plan. It goes on for a while, a lot of God stuff. Four, you don't have to believe people are born evil. Five, people do change and change is good. I like this. six, people do change, and change is good. Okay, I think that's, at first it seems like a mistake, but I think it's kind of brilliant to have two lines about change the exact same right next to each other. Seven, you can make people see the truth about ourselves. We do change, and love is a big part of it. And eight, this is the last one, there is no sin you can't get past. That's just how the world is. Just remember the words from Revelation 16:10. Do not fear those who kill the body, but are not. And that's where it ends.
I can't figure out what is the, is this program like latching onto and then like just running with
very strange. Yeah. Well, let's try. Okay. Those are big famous ones. Maybe the machine was all confused by like, these lines that are probably out there a lot in the artificial consciousness. So I'm going to try one. The bird landed on Emily's shoulder as the sun shone down.
And that's Wuthering Heights, or that's just one you're
making
up? No,
that's just one I made up.
Okay, gotcha.
But thank you for attributing it. So the bird landed on Emily's shoulder as the sun shone down. He grinned widely and held out his hand. You're welcome, you little shit.
No.
Emily looked at her feet for a moment before reaching out and taking the boy's thumb. What boy? And they both sat up straight. The boy held her hand, and her eyes drifted in and out for a moment as his thumb was pressed to her hand. Emily smiled happily and reached behind her to hold the boy's hand. Did you do the same to me? She whispered. The man nodded. You look a lot like him, he said. I like that. Well, it would be nice if you took me home, she teased as she looked back at him. The boy sighed a little and looked over at his mother. She was right. You're much more familiar. You lived here your whole life, you know. It's just that you could never talk at home, Emily teased. And don't you think it would be better if I could go to school? Okay.
What?
That's, I will say for the record, that is better than a lot of the things I've written. weird.
I thought this would be
funny and goofy, but it's just kind of strange, isn't
it? I'm like finding myself just sort of dumbfounded.
I think it's because since it's not a human, since it's an AI, there's not quite enough to make sense of there. So it's sort of like looking at an abstract painting that's just too much colors and not enough lily pads.
I think the most frustrating thing is I can't ask anyone any questions about this.
That's true. Now, Colin, why don't you give me one more final one, a very short
sentence?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can even just give me three words.
Okay. Let's go. Cup, wine, candle.
Cup, wine, candle. Okay, well, we're pushing it because this is just random words, but
Do you want them to be in
I like it. Okay. Cup, wine, candle. A simple cup of coffee candle. Use the kitchen for warming up. A simple cup of water candle. An easy way to use tea kettles when you're using your oven. A tiny lamp that turns the LED lights off when you're done cooking so you won't be disturbed. A candle holder. This is a poem. A mini platter filled with your favorite chocolate chip cookie dough. A cute little candle made to look like some little girl, but is really just an ordinary oil lamp with a few nice touches. The mini candle holder, another small candle holder with a few features, tiny candles from Kukli Cords, a really, really adorable candle, a cute lighted candle holder that doesn't take up too much space in the kitchen, a tiny candle holder for your car or van, a lighted candle holder for when you're in a hurry, a cute little candle that lights up the kitchen when you get. So I think
that might be my favorite one.
I think that we should start using this to write our novels for us line by line.
Cute little coffee candle was the first line of
cute that. Little coffee candle. Well, speaking of intelligence, our guest today, there's nothing artificial about her intelligence. She is in her 60s, if you can believe it, and writes young adult fiction about teens with, and you're never going to believe this, terminal illnesses.
Someone's got to. And not only that, she's written 70 young adult novels, including her most recent, Angels Die of So Much Love.
Oh.
And we are so excited, thrilled to have her here today, Laura Lee Desiree.
Thank you so much.
Oh,
thank you for being here,
is
Laura
all
Lee.
Ours, yeah.
What an intro.
How has your journey to our studio been? How does today find you?
Today finds me well and satiated in every way.
Oh.
And ready to speak with two great young minds.
Oh,
well, you said it, not us. But I just want to say right off the bat, I'm so glad that an older person is writing young adult fiction, because I hate when young people write young adult fiction because it's like you're too close
to
it.
There's no perspective.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, my gosh. We're finishing each other's sentences.
I know. Same wavelength, the two of us.
So today, what are you going to be reading from? Is it this latest work?
It is this latest work. It's I'm going to be reading a brief passage from chapter 8 of my latest novel, which is titled Young Angels Die of So Much Love.
What a beautiful title.
Thank you. Most of my titles, you know, I've been critiqued for having too many titles that are too similar to one another. Mm-hmm. Many of them contain variations on the themes of love, death, youth.
Angels,
but it's important for young people to have a place to go where they can process trauma.
Sure.
And I want my books to be that place.
Mm-hmm.
I am not certified in any way. I have no counseling degree. I, you know, my expertise is the writing. I shop on Amazon. I do the writing.
I mean, some people go to therapy to talk to a therapist. Some people read a book to cry. And isn't that the same thing?
It's the same thing.
You can find wisdom anywhere if you're looking for it.
Wisdom can look like anything. You spill a sack of Scrabble letters on a table and you'll find some wisdom there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many
Yeah, how many letters is that? That'd be good if you found
one
that'd be a pretty
long
good score.
Word?
Yeah, no,
yeah.
Wisdom, the word wisdom,
oh, yeah,
if
that's
you
true.
Like throw Scrabble letters out
oh,
there.
Oh, yes, if you get that on the right spots on the board,
oh, yeah.
you're looking
really
at
triple
you know.
Letter
yeah,
score.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, Lorelei, we are so excited to hear this excerpt. The stage is yours.
Thank you. I'm used to doing a reading for a live audience, so if I pause in, you know, dramatic places, don't, you know.
Do you want us to do, like, labored breathing or any claps or anything?
Any crying you're moved to do, please
okay, sure.
do. Jessa lay still on the hospital bed, her breathing shallow. McBrennigan touched her arm and felt the chill of death sweep through his fingertips as the hollow beep of the monitor trilled in his ear. The cancer, he thought. It's here to stay. He took a seat in the chair by the window, wiping away a tear. The last few months had seemed too good to be true, and now he knew why. Jessa had cancer. It was unfair because she was so young. He recalled the first time he'd ever seen her, on the slip and slide at Camp Christ, her long ponytail flying behind her as she threw caution to the wind, slipping and sliding. How much longer would she still have a ponytail? McBrennigan wondered. The chemotherapy was starting to take its toll on her gorgeous young hair. Jess's nurse entered the room and seemed surprised to see McBrennigan there. How are you holding up, young man? The nurse asked sympathetically. All of this must be pretty hard on you. McBrennigan nodded in that way that people who are very young and yet have been through so much already have. As she checked Jess's vitals, the nurse continued, Son, you should get out of here and get some sleep. You're 17 years old. You're a star football quarterback. You're supposed to be taking your girlfriend to the homecoming dance, using your new driver's license, hanging out with your friends. You're not supposed to be in a hospital room. You're too young to have to be this strong. McBrennigan knew the nurse was right. Anger welled in his chest and he screamed, Goddamn cancer! As he punched the hapless teddy bear sitting at Jess's bedside. Then he began to cry. The nurse dropped her clipboard and hugged him close. Weeping openly into her arms, McBrennigan shook with emotion. When he came up for air, the nurse stroked his cheek and said, Take care of yourself, McBrennigan. You hear? She left the room, and McBrennigan reached into his bag to pull out a notebook. In addition to being a football quarterback, he was the editor-in-chief of the high school literary magazine. Without thinking, he began to write, feverishly, never stopping, every memory he had of himself and Jessa. Camp Christ, the dock down by the lake, the dance under the stars, fireflies in the twilight, the cornhole, every precious moment of their young lives. He had to write it all, let her know what she meant to him before it was too late, due to cancer.
Wow. I almost don't want to say anything to disturb the sacred silence that we have here.
Just let it sit.
And I run into that, you know, I run into that feeling a lot at a lot of Barnes & Nobles.
Wow.
Lorelei, that's some heavy stuff. I'm glad that someone is writing this for the kids, but I also have to say that, you know, immediately, I'm not a parent, but I like to tell parents what they should do. Mm-hmm. Is this too much for our young children's minds?
You know, a lot of people have asked me that, and, you know, to them, I point out the recent trend in young adult films and literature, you know, that sells very well.
Can I guess?
I think shows that the teens have a thirst for this material.
Spider-Man? Is that what you're talking about?
I wasn't thinking. I'm sure if you gave me a moment, I could think of a way that, you know, lost
it's a
some terminal illness.
It's kind of a disease that he has all those webs inside.
Is it terminal? That's my specialty, so.
Yeah.
Oh,
but, you know,
okay.
Fault in Our Stars, isn't that, you know, sort of young people?
I was thinking about this. This did remind me a little bit of Fault in Our Stars.
Well, I was doing this before and John Green was in diapers.
Fault in Our Stars is the one where
I've never read it. I refuse.
Where there's the upside down kiss with Kirsten Dunst. Is that Fault in Our Stars?
You know, I wouldn't know because I avoid it.
Where, okay.
It is a very popular one. I think there is an upside down kiss between a man who has the powers of a spider and Kirsten Dunst.
It sounds to me like you're
describing
Spider-Man.
But there's also a character who has terminal cancer and falls in love, and they're sort of like, well, what's the point of love with all this cancer? And you're saying that these two, this work and your work, are completely unrelated.
No, completely separate. I mean, you know, if he borrowed from me, I can't help that. And God love him, who wouldn't? You know, I've been at this for so long. You know, I could breathe it. I eat it, breathe it, sleep it.
Yeah.
Wow.
What was the name of the was it McBrennan or what was
McBrennigan?
McBrennigan. I resonated a lot with that character because I had a very, it sounded a lot like my high school experience. Mm. Not so much the star football quarterback or the being the editor in chief of the school magazine or having a girlfriend or having to deal with anything traumatic. It's just that I went to high school, and so I just resonated a lot.
You know, it's like we were speaking about earlier. You throw an experience out, and people will take what they want from it. And so it seems like you have taken.
I remember high
from
school.
Your mediocre high school career. You've related to this extraordinary character.
Mediocre is a little.
I'm so sorry.
Gracious. He was definitely below that. I would say subpar from what I've heard and what I've read in the yearbook. I've read every yearbook of Collins High School. And
they're good reading.
Good reading. And he comes across as a sort of an extra.
Oh, an extra.
I was voted most likely to have their picture cut from the yearbook if there wasn't enough space. So, I mean.
Yeah, that's true.
Pretty cool.
Remembered
it's a good
way to get remembered. Now, I also connected with McBrennigan. I think it's just something about having a male character in a book just lets me sort of see myself. And I suddenly say, I am a hero. I have a unique perspective on the world. And this character, I can suddenly relate to everything because I see myself mirrored. And that's why I think it's so important for every piece of media to have something like that for me to latch on to.
I would agree. All my novels are about white heterosexual couples, one of whom one or more of whom have some sort of illness.
I was pretty thrilled. What was the name of the character with cancer again?
Jessa.
I was pretty thrilled to hear that she had terminal cancer. I was like, she's not going to be around too much longer in this book. It's just going to be about this McBrennigan guy. Mm-hmm. And
I can't spoil for those. I'd love for folks to hop on my website luraleedesiree.com and buy the book. So
wow, you got the domain. That's awesome.
I got the domain. You know, Laura Lee is not as common a first name as a lot of people seem to think it is.
We had a lot of trouble getting you through security here because obviously Forever Dog has we're on the 30th floor and there's, you know, you have to sign in with the front desk. You have to sign in with
the
security.
Back desk.
You have to go up through the elevators.
It is a 29 floor building. And then we have a tree on the roof and that's the tree house is our floor.
Because it's kind
that.
Of a cool creative space. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we spelled it Laura Lee, like quietly with the L-Y, and that's not correct. Now, I just want to know, you said that you kind of use these themes. You talk about terminal illness a lot. So what are some of the other things that you've tackled? I'd love to get a sense of your work and how are there McBrennigans in a lot of your novels? Are there Jessas in a lot of your novels?
Not by name, but, you know, in trope, in archetype, absolutely. Promising young people who have their beautiful lives cut short by a disease. Other common themes I would say include horseback riding, You know, there's, I grew up myself in, I was born in Philadelphia, but I then, by, you know, by the grace of God, moved to Tennessee. So I, you know, I love the American South, and to me, it's the finest place to come of age. So there's, you know, a lot of swamp riding, you know, dune buggies.
A lot of swamp riding.
Yes.
Yeah. I will say one of the biggest criticisms your writing has received over the years is that it's either the subject matter is so incredibly heavy, like about a teen dying of a terminal illness, or it's completely no story at all, just about horseback riding for 300 pages.
It's like Seabiscuit, but...
yeah, but like nothing
none
happened.
None of the racing.
Yeah.
And that's,
well, you know, to that end, I would say we referenced Moby Dick earlier. I mean, if we want to talk about a great work of literature that's only about one thing for hundreds of pages at a time, well, whale hunting, so I don't understand why. Yeah,
you know what? That's true.
You know, when a woman does it about horseback riding, it's, you know, all of a sudden...
Perhaps there is a double standard here.
Thank you.
Okay. But
I would like to be thought of as the Herman Melville of the South, American South, who is a woman who is exclusively writing about teenagers with diseases that cannot be cured.
And that is in the about the author that you've,
thank
you've
you.
Put on,
yes,
on the books.
Yeah. I saw that you read that.
I had a question. When McBrennigan was sort of remembering all these high school experiences, there's one that kind of jumped out to me, the cornhole.
Mm.
Is that one specific cornhole, or is that all of the cornholing that he's done over the years?
It's all of the cornhole. Mm. When you think about the quintessential American teenage experience, you're at a summer camp, out under the stars, and the kids love to play cornhole. It's a game. It's timeless. You can play it if you're rich. You can play it if you're poor. You don't need hardly any materials besides some wooden boards with a hole in them for the corn.
And something to chuck.
And something to throw.
Okay. See, I was confused. I thought cornhole, that was a Civil War battle. The Battle of Cornhole, I thought. Is that not right?
Well, not that I know.
Okay.
There was a Revolutionary War general named Cornwallis.
Ah, yes, Cornwallis.
And maybe you were thinking of...
Believe
cornhole and Cornwallis are very similar.
Yeah, I do get the two mixed up. Okay, fair enough.
Colin also confuses Andrew Jackson with playing jacks.
Yeah,
where you drop the ball and you scoop up the jacks. It's he got hit in the head pretty hard.
Oh my God,
it's not mixed.
Now I'd love to talk to you about that.
Oh, well, yeah.
Hit in the head at what age? And how hard? And with what?
10?
Mm.
16?
Ooh.
24.
Oh, my God. Well, you've 29. Already survived much longer than most of my protagonists, I'll tell you that much right now.
I have a pretty thick skull.
Wow.
There
That's
is,
putting it nicely.
Yeah. It's like no room. There's no room for brain. Mm. It's mostly just skull. It's like one of those...
It's like when
you know, pistachio shells that you open up and there's nothing inside and you're like, what the heck?
Such a disappointment.
It's like when you get one of those like really strong, like an OtterBox iPhone case where you're almost like, that's too much case. It almost seems like you're overcompensating for
this small,
fragile phone.
I don't use an iPhone. I can't, I can't wrap my head around it.
We want to hear a little bit more about you as a person. You're 70. I know you shouldn't bring up an author's age.
Oh, I'm very proud of my age. I have it on my website.
That's cool. In what section?
About me.
And
I love that section.
And also, not to bring up your about the author again, where usually there's a picture of the author, it's just a birthday cake with candles made out of, let's say, 70. Yeah.
You know what else I love is there's a gallery section. I was like, what's that going to be? And it's all pictures of horses.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be Google image search pictures of horses, not ones you know.
Oh, no, I've never owned horses. You know, I just think they're beautiful animals. So I love, you know, it calms me. And, you know, I've got an intern and you know, it's my niece and she helps me, you know, to put together the photos. And so she'll go and she'll say, hey, you know, Aunt Laurie, how's this look? And, you know, she'll lay it out for me and show me the little thumbnails of the horses. And as long as, you know, there's at least one Clydesdale in there, I'm happy. So
you got to hit that minimum.
It's so fun.
Clydesdales, it's like they're wearing bell-bottoms.
It's like they're wearing bell-bottoms. And, you know, I just love those Budweiser commercials. I think they're so funny.
Yes. Oh, what's funnier than a commercial?
I don't.
Are you genuinely asking?
Stitches thinking about
anything funnier than a commercial.
You know, make me laugh
and then tell me what I need.
Tell me what I need. And you know, the animals that they're using in commercials these days, it's really nice. You know, you look at the Coca-Cola polar bears and those are some really genuinely very beautiful animals.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And they can turn a joke.
And, you know, the physical comedy there, you know.
Well, there is storytelling in commercials. Yeah, there's fear. You're invoking fear in the viewer. Then there's hope.
Desire.
Mm-hmm. Desire.
Lust.
Yeah, lust. And there's all the classics of storytelling are in a good commercial. And now, horses, of course.
And a horses, of courses. Now, Laura Lee. Is it okay if I call you Laura or should it be Laura Lee?
Laura Lee, please.
Okay, Laura Lee. Every writer has a different origin story of how they first realized they were a writer and how they began to write. For me, I lost a bet. But how did you realize that you were an author?
Now, that's really interesting. That's a really interesting question. I also lost a bet.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I was. Now you're going to think this is very silly, but my then boyfriend, now husband, Charles and I were out, beautiful Tennessee night, and we were out on Chattanooga.
Oh.
The Chattanooga. And
I just saw the Chattanooga. Big, big rivers.
A huge body of water.
And pretty wet, too.
Big fan of water. Like putting my hand in it. I like water.
So you and your then boyfriend Charles were on the Chattanooga?
Yes. On the banks of the Chattanooga, and we... You know, he said, I'm going to flip a coin. So I guess it wasn't a bet so much as a wager.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
A little dangle with fate.
A game of chance.
A game of chance. He said, I've got this quarter in my... And this was, you know, this was in the days before they were putting all the states, you know, the state birds and flowers on the quarters.
This was back just when a quarter meant something.
A quarter meant something. Thank you. Yes. And a quarter was a quarter. And America was America. He said, I'll bet you if this is a heads, you've got to submit that short story you've been writing to the local paper. You got to see if they'll take it. And if it's a tails, you can continue to not submit it anywhere. And I said, okay, I'll take you up on that, Charles. And he flipped and wouldn't you know, it's heads.
Wow.
And I said, and the rest is history. There was an immediate outcry from the town. Not one of, you know, they didn't love it. People were upset.
Oh.
They were upset by the rawness of my first short story.
Can we ask, what was the short story called and what was it about? Mm-hmm.
The short story was called Dying to Live. And, you know, I mean, it was about a young girl whose eyes were blown out in a chemistry explosion. And she, you know, had a terrible thing befall her.
Worse than that?
No, that was
the terrible thing. Okay.
The terrible thing that happened was the chemistry explosion. And after her sight was taken from her.
That's why I don't think they should teach science in school.
Yeah.
And I agree. They should replace it with handwriting.
Even quiet time would be better than chemistry. Mm. Yeah.
You know, because no one needs it.
No.
What you need is, you know, communication, the written word, hearts communing with other hearts.
Yeah. What I need is my eyes still, thank you very much.
Exactly.
And maybe a Kama Sutra class.
Oh, well, no, I'm very old-fashioned on that.
Okay. I'm pretty new-fashioned in that I'm looking for a teacher to show me how to make sex better. So right now it's ruining my life. You know what? We're not here to talk about this. So
no, I'm very happy to talk about it. You know, my husband and I have been married for, you know, almost half a century, if you think about it, in terms of centuries versus years.
Got married when you were 20?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That's
very incredible. Young. But that's how we did it back. You know, you boys don't know.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
We used to do it like that.
I'm saving marriage for when I'm 53.
And that's very sweet. I think that's sweet when people wait, when they save themselves.
You save yourself for marriage, and the marriage happens at 53.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So your story's called Dying to Live, and the girl blows her eyes out and...
In a chemistry explosion.
That can't go well. That doesn't kill her, though.
No, she's still alive, but she's ugly, you know? And the fact is... that she's ugly. And again, I, you know, this is where I will get in trouble with some listeners because I'm very old school. You know, I believe that women are meant to be beautiful and desirable, and that men, you know, they see what they like and they go after it. And, you know, that's in our DNA. We want to be taken.
As a writer, as a male writer, as a straight white male writer, I find when I'm describing...
Your title just keeps expanding.
Well, I've accumulated these titles over many years. I find that when I'm describing a female character in a book, first thing I got to do is describe her physicality.
Mm-hmm.
Hair, bosom, the sway of her walk.
And I would agree.
And I just, and I can go on for a paragraph, even sometimes the entire book, without kind of talking about her wants, her wishes, her desires, her inner life, her thoughts, her hopes, her dreams. Just sort of stay on that, like, is she a blonde or a brunette?
Mm-hmm.
And what
well,
about
so
that bosom?
There's so much detail, you yes. know, there's so much you can learn about someone when you describe, you
just
know, the physical,
physical
shape
attributes.
Of their body. Absolutely.
It's important.
I can, yeah, and I think that's such a... You know, when you say her eyes were blown out with a chemistry experiment, it's like, you know, me as the reader, I'm like, wait a minute, the eyes are gone? Like, and then, you know, my first question is like, am I still attracted to her?
Right.
And you're like, no, she's ugly.
Well,
now.
And that,
and
you know,
I'm like, okay.
Represents right. the central conflict of the story is that she's a high school girl who now has no eyes. Where once there were two. And yeah. so, you know, to
Laura
continue
Lee,
to be desirable and to find love in the face of that.
Don't tell her. Me Homecoming's about
yeah. And you
right
know
on.
That Homecoming is about
her. Oh, I have read this. And then, like, the jock takes her out as a mm-hmm. joke. And then he goes to take off her sunglasses.
And there's nothing
but
underneath.
But then there's no eyes. He's big. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, yeah. Big gaping ash holes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he does not realize that she's actually beautiful without her glasses.
And
he puts them back on.
By the end of the short story, yeah. he's coming around.
Okay.
He's yeah. coming around yeah. on her. But, you know, it was called, you know, not progressive. It was called anti-feminist by, you know, a lot of people, even in my very conservative Tennessee town. So, you know, wow. I was hated. I was mocked. I was reviled.
Even they were like, you should probably... You know, be you
gotta,
a little bit more.
You got to stop calling her ugly.
And I did. And I'm not afraid to use the word ugly.
Yeah.
That's
because,
refreshing.
You know, we got to keep words have meaning.
Yeah,
totally.
That is. Yeah, that's intense that people in your conservative town were calling you anti-feminist.
Mm-hmm. I think yeah. that there's nothing more important than freedom of speech. And when I find people out there who are trying to stifle it,
mm-hmm.
I get them fired from their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I try to kind of get those words that they've said removed from the internet or Twitter or the books that they've written. And then I try to get them kind of isolated from society.
So, well, you know, I've been very offended by that viewpoint in my lifetime. But, you know... I have a right to publish my anti-feminist fiction
yes.
in a town newspaper the same way that you have to, you know, ask about the Kama Sutra on the air. And that is just the beautiful nature of the country that we live in.
It's freedom of speech.
Absolutely.
I love that.
And my husband fought in Vietnam for that.
Wow. That's so... I think that works. Yeah, I think that works.
He did.
So that...
Wait, let's just... Yeah, no, I think it works. I think it works. Yeah,
so
I think it works.
You get this story published in the newspaper. There's a lot of backlash.
Mm-hmm.
If I were you, I'd have turned tail and probably become a vet.
Oh, God. Well, I wish because, as you know, I love horses, but it's a tremendous amount of schooling.
It's true.
To be a veterinarian, so I couldn't, you know, I had my skill. My skill was my skill with the written word,
yeah.
my pen.
Yeah.
So well, I stayed. I doubled down and I continued to publish... in installments, several more stories that turned into, you know, short story collections, and then, you know, eventually my first novel in the local paper.
And
then
was
the
your
rest
first
is history.
Novel? Was it Dying to Live turned into a novel?
It was, you know what, a similar premise I borrowed from the short stories. I took them all out of the newspaper and I said, okay, I'm making these into a book.
Sure.
And yes, I called it Dying to Live, the anthology.
Wow. And then that was the one that famously had that second title. It was Dying to Live, the anthology, or Blown Right Out.
Or Blown Right Out.
Yes. That took the world by storm, and that's kind of what started this. Now, is it hard writing for young adults as you've gotten older?
That's a great question.
Thank you.
I feel that it...
Really
I do have to
done,
work
Michael.
Thank you so much,
harder to keep in touch with the technologies. You know, I recently wrote a book that was all in email and texting format. And I did that as a challenge to myself to stay in touch with how young people today communicate with one another, which is, you know, very often not in person anymore.
No, that's true.
Kids, they don't want to see each other. Mm-hmm. They want to tweet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They stay off Twitter.
Fool.
Yeah, they want to. What's like one of the new? There's
TikTok.
Like a TikTok.
I've actually just downloaded the app. I previously was just watching TikToks on Twitter, and now I've downloaded the app, and I've got to say, big fan. I really like it, and I think the teens are creative and doing a lot of cool, interesting
things. They really are. They have endless reserves of creativity.
I'm very excited for a time where I like a full sentence just won't make sense to me anymore. To hear something like, I've been watching TikToks on Twitter, I feel like I'm almost there. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, I can barely understand
if
what's
I
going on.
If I can do
on.
It, yeah. You can do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Young man.
All right.
I wrote a novella all on my Instagram because they say a picture's worth 1,000 words. And I've written over, I think, 10 million words in pictures.
Oh.
It's not, I wouldn't say, so basically go to my Instagram, scroll through, okay. And then basically you have to kind of come up with the story that connects all the pictures. A lot of it is of my food or me on vacation.
It's like a choose your own interesting places. Yeah. Look at us again.
Yes. Nobody tell Charles. I found a new suitor.
Oh, that would actually be huge for Colin.
Oh, yeah.
To have a love interest.
Do you want to try to seduce each of our guests? And so far, nobody's bitten. Well, in fact, a number of people have bitten, but not in the way of...
Yeah. It doesn't help that I sit... as far across the room as I can.
You have been shouting, I noticed.
You and I are sort of here, right here, eye to eye. Yeah. Colin is as far away as possible in the corner.
And it seems like that seat could move if you wanted it to move closer.
Well, there's an electric
fence. I'm okay. But we've also established on this podcast that I am a virgin.
Yes, yeah. Yes. We haven't talked about that in a couple hours.
In a couple episodes, yeah. So that is part of the character that we've decided. So I guess now that's my character.
One fun thing is that any episode you could come in and say, I did it, I finally had sex, but it hasn't happened yet.
Nope.
And I'm excited for the time where that becomes a part of this rich tapestry that we weave here at Literati. And me, unfortunately, I'm having sex so much that it's numb down there.
I heard it's ruining your life. Is that how
it's my life?
You mentioned earlier.
I'm feeling no connection and I have a screen that I'm watching. I'm watching Frasier on my laptop.
Uh-huh.
While having sex?
My wife is watching a different screen. She's watching Neon Evangel... what's funnier than that? She's watching Sailor Moon on Netflix on her iPad mini. And so we're both watching our own thing. And
you are mid-coitus? Wow.
Okay, there are definitely sparks happening, and it's not just the faulty Forever Dog equipment. Yeah, and we're just not connecting, and I don't know. I said before that I love rivers because they're so wet, and I'm famously too wet. I get very sweaty down there. I have what's called male moisture, and it means that there's... no friction. It's too slippery.
Well, I don't know that there is. Is friction important in
yes. Without the friction, you don't get the grind. So, anyway, this is just a brief look into how my sex life is ruined. So, and again, this we probably shouldn't talk about this too much because this is a children's podcast. Or it's been put into the children's.
We were accidentally put into the children's category of podcast, and we haven't figured out how to get it.
This is real.
Yes, this is real.
Oh, this is real. Do you think that there could be a story? Maybe Michael has terminal male moisture.
Terminal male moisture.
Yeah, could be.
Too wet to... yes, I could think of a title for it right now.
It's amazing watching her work. Her eyes are fluttering. It's like REM sleep.
Too wet to walk.
Oh. I'm in a wheelchair.
You're in a wheelchair.
I keep slipping out of my sneakers.
Yeah.
You're in a wheelchair.
I wonder.
I've been criticized for my, my treatment of issues for the differently abled, and you know I'm just old, and so I can sort of
get away with it.
Yeah,
I do whatever I want, and I don't have to learn because I'm of that age.
You refuse to put wheelchair accessible ramps or anything of
in my
that
stories.
Nature in your stories.
And yeah. Because I came of age in a time when you walked up the stairs. You can't
that
use that.
Very close-minded. That is very close-minded. Now, I have a question. I would love to see a sense of, I know all these books are wildly different, but they also kind of follow this pattern of a story that we can grasp onto. What's the process that you, when do you know, oh, this is a terminal illness I want to write about? And when you're like, oh, this is just fucking chicken pox.
Right. It's a great question. For me, I never start with the illness. I start with the love story. And then I work my way backwards to an illness that works for what the central character's, you know, flaws, wants, hopes are.
Okay, so
how
step
can I take
one.
Away love from
exactly.
these teens?
Exactly. What disease will work best?
Yeah. Okay, so start us off. Step one, you need a love story. What's that look like?
You need a man and a woman.
Sure.
And I'm sorry, once again, to the people who say that I need to expand my horizons. I write what I know, and what I know is a man and a woman.
Our listeners are going to love this.
What I know is a man and a woman. And so I start with, you know, typically I'll start with the female protagonist because that's the perspective I understand the most as a biological woman.
Sounds like Latin to me.
Right. Well, men are from Mars and women are from Venus.
It's true. That is actually what I believe.
Those, you know, Roman gods.
Yeah.
So I start with the female protagonist and then, you know, I create that character, and then I move on to the male love interest, or, you know, the person she's hoping to woo, hoping will woo her, and then create that dynamic, and then from there I think, okay, what's the best way? Right, because as writers we have to cause our characters pain or there's no growth. So I say, okay, well, what is it today? And I've got a little wheel that I spin. And it's, you know, I have my niece who's my intern, you know, tape up a different malady, a different accident that could befall.
Yes.
And I spin the wheel and I say, okay, what's it going to be? And if it doesn't work, I'll give it another spin.
What are some of these maladies? Like rock fall, boulder falls on leg?
Boulder fall, carriage accident.
Carriage accident, is that for a period piece novel?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And you most also, of them are set in the modern day, but occasionally I dally style. Back into.
And you did show us a picture of this this wheel that you spin, and one of the options is just about horses.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can't find a malady and it lands on just about horses.
Fall off a horse, kicked by a horse.
Or that's just the book where they just ride horse. They just ride the horse for the whole
Can
time.
Can Colin and I pitch you some more maladies and you tell us whether or not they're good?
Oh, I'd be very happy. My mind is a sponge.
Yeah, you tell us if you could see a kid dying from this.
Okay. I'm going to write these down.
Bones fall out.
Yes.
Okay. Oh. Okay. There we go. Okay.
Cough up lungs and heart.
Okay, that one works.
Okay.
Too smart for everybody. They're too smart.
Too smart to live.
Super smart.
Yes.
Okay, wow. I didn't think that
there's
one
there's almost like. Nothing I'm going to shut down.
Okay.
Swallow too many rocks.
Yes.
Yeah.
In Tennessee, God, it happens once a week.
That happens a lot.
Yeah.
The rocks down there
skipping
so
rocks
tasty.
On the lake and, you know.
A dirt, you get a dirt road and a car, a truck.
I'm gonna take my horse down to Old Town Road.
Michael, we can't license this.
I can't no more. I got another pitch. Allergic to water.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm adding these all to the wheel.
I got the horses in the back. I'm just kidding.
Skin turned inside out somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's possible.
Yeah.
Heart. Sucks.
Yes. I mean, in so many words, that's, you know, that's heart disease.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know I was a medical doctor.
I would love to read that scene where the doctor enters and they're like flipping their pages on the clipboard.
I'm sorry, Tessa. Your heart sucks.
Now, you know, I would finesse it.
Oh, sure.
Oh,
and that one would be... And that would be great, because then when Tessa finds out that her heart sucks and she's dying from it, then McGrabbagregan, or whatever his name is, will be like, I feel like my heart sucks now that it's breaking because I'm losing you.
Mm-hmm. Does the male character ever die or suffer?
Yes. There is, I do have a story where the young male lead is a young man named Luke, and he has leukemia.
He was the first. They named it after him.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Mm-hmm. This is another one of your period pieces.
Mm-hmm. It's like so the ironic.
The first person ever to get leukemia, and you know his name is spelled L-E-U-K.
Like pulling a Luke.
And so that's
Luke.
Where they. That's what it's. You know.
Yeah.
Fiction. In that fictional universe, the disease is named after my character. Wow. And that's a choice I get to make as a writer. And that's being a writer is so wonderful.
Oh, it's the freaking best. I love it. I love telling people. I just love telling people that I'm a writer.
You should see Colin at a party. He goes person to person. He doesn't even give them a chance to respond.
Yeah.
He's just like, hi, I'm Colin. I'm a very important writer.
Yeah.
Bye.
There are too many pens in my breast pocket at all times. It's like splitting.
I see. It's splitting, stained,
peacock's tail.
Mm-hmm.
And they are. I do have like all the colors of the rainbow. All my pens.
He's
are,
ruining his Topshop shirt.
Yeah.
Now, this sounds so exciting. We want to know what kind of advice you'd give for young writers who are hoping to forge a similar path.
Mm. Spend a lot of time at the hospital.
Oh. Sure.
You've got to go. You've got to see where people are hurting, how they're hurting.
Conflict, right?
Conflict.
Writing's about conflict.
You are not a writer until you've seen about 100 people die in front of you. You're not a writer.
Absolutely.
I've always said that.
Also, if you hang out at the hospital long enough, you're going to get a free shot. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
An inoculation?
Yes.
Okay.
A nocturnal inoculation. I've had several of those. So we like to end with something that we call epilogues.
We haven't figured out the title, but our listeners love it.
Everybody loves it. The listeners do. The podcast
network
does.
You're right. It is called epilogues.
I think it's called epilogues.
Footnotes is the other thing.
Yeah.
But our listeners, we can't stress this enough.
Or we could do shortest best.
Our listeners love it. What?
Or we could do the other one, shortest, saddest. Let's do the one that we just talked about for a minute.
Yeah.
So basically in this, we let the readers in on a little tasty tease of what's to come, the title of their next book and the first line. And it's just a way to sort of say, hey, keep listening. And hey, go to your local Amazon.com and put this book on reserve.
Mm-hmm.
And we say, if you want to support the arts, if you want to support writers and independent booksellers, go to Amazon.com because you can get the best prices.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the best way to sort of be part of the literary community. So
are you sponsored at all, or that's just you?
No. We got a couple sponsorship options came to us, but they were for real bad stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
We got Glocks.com. And they sent us an ad read, and we just had to shoot off Glocks the whole time, so we passed on that. And then,
well, you know, being from Tennessee, I'm a gun girl. I love
your guns and your horses.
Mm-hmm.
And what we also got a potential sponsor from No Condoms, and it was
it was
a lobbying.
Yeah, it's not a product. It's more of a concept that they're trying
not
to promote.
Wearing condoms.
No condoms,
and we couldn't really support
and
that.
And it's something like their slogan was, "Imagine a world with no condoms."
Boy, it feels so good.
It feels good, doesn't it?
Yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, and then just Kevin Sorbo keeps trying to get ad time on here, and we're like, well, no, we need something. So we'll each give you the title. And Colin, did you want to start?
Sure, I'd love to start. Now, for any longtime listeners, they're probably catching on that all my new books have very poetic-sounding titles and then long pauses while I try to think of whatever the first sentence is.
Remember. Because we don't write on computers like Philistines. We write longhand cursive on parchment.
No, and I will say that after we all do one, I think we should give the AI one more shot.
Oh,
the
first I would.
I actually have something
queued
up.
You got something lined up? Okay, great. So, so my book is called, my upcoming book is called A Dream Never Remembered.
Mm-hmm.
And the first line is, was frightened out of sleep. just a bad dream. What was it about? I don't know. Back to bed. There you go.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the first.
And
that's
it.
How it starts.
We're starting with an onomatopoeia.
Yeah.
Or so, you know, some.
You should see how he spells it, too.
Yeah, how do you spell?
How do I spell onomatopoeia?
Well, I could just look at your paper.
So it's, I spell it, first of all, Ottawa. So I start with Ottawa,
uh-huh.
and then Mono, and then Peas.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
So yeah. it's, yep, that's how it's spelled.
That's, yeah. I love that. Okay, I'll go next. My upcoming novel's coming out in 2020, so get your eyes ready for that, and it's called A Big Bad Boy. Crunch, crunch goes your bones, says the big bad boy as he stomps around the villa, pissed as can be. I'm coming to get ya, and I'm not gonna stop until I've done the dirty, dirty deed I came to do, which is to snap you in half. All of you. For I am bad, and I am big, and I'm also a motherfucking boy.
Oh, this is an anti-hero.
Yes. Oh, he's a Walter White. I love, you know, I love that because the first sentence is so long.
It kind of reaches the point where you're like, where's this going? Is it going anywhere? Nope. Oh, there it goes. Yeah.
Well, you also, you want the first sentence to be very long. And then this way, all the other sentences that follow are sort of a breeze for the reader.
You've earned
absolutely.
It.
Like, yeah, they're like, okay, this is like skiing downhill after after that first long uphill sentence.
And a lot of people, when they're browsing, they're like, well, I'll just read the first sentence. So what I've been working on, and this is, I haven't talked about this before, I'm trying to do a whole book that's just one sentence. Because that way, if they're like, well, I'll just read the first sentence, then they'll have read the whole
and
book.
And then you've tricked them.
I've tricked them. Okay, Laura Lee, your next book and the first line.
My next paperback, I publish only in paperback, is titled Now I Lay Me Down to Die. And rough draft of the first sentence. Kevin stirred.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Oh,
that's and you don't incredible. You like to keep yours long. I
you
like
don't
to keep
know,
them short.
Is that T? Is he nervous about something?
Yes. Well, you'll soon find that he's stirring from a 6-month coma.
Oh.
He's coming, he's being revived, but
I love that. Mm-hmm. Now I put that title into the AI and this is what it came up with. And it's short, much shorter than the others. Now I lay me down to die, and I died because I'm not the kind of man who dies to make his friends happy. So when I die so when I die, I'll take my love for granted. And I think if that isn't
Whoa.
An amazing version of one of your books, thank you to talktotransformer.com.
Talktotransformer.com. I've got to get my niece on that.
It's pretty fantastic.
I will say that I'm going to have to keep this in mind for our future epilogues because
it's a useful way to not have to think of something bad on the spot.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Laura Lee Desiree, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Colin and Michael.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
And that's the end of that chapter. But the protagonist in this upcoming book isn't going to actually die, right? Because I've gotten pretty attached to them.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, God. Don't say it ain't so.
Forever Dog. This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.